Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Capitalist Investor. As always, you have me, Diamond Hands D. We got Tony the Tiger, and back by popular demand, replacing Luke, who is on assignment this week, Dave Abate. What's up, Dave?
It's great to be here, guys. This is temporary. I don't want to take Luke's spot permanently.
Man, it sounds like if a spot opened up, you would not be the first to apply with that.
I won't be hard to find. What does Dion say?
I will find you.
All right. So, yeah. So, you know, I think we took a look at this week's show. You know, there's a kind of, just a lot of, kind of uncertainty, you know, whether it's, you know, geopolitical or, you know, kind of here locally. With the economy, all that good stuff. So we thought we'd kind of take a step back, do a little bit more of a planning focused show. Cause Dave actually found a really good article, from CNBC, titled, The Three Money Moves Wealthy Americans Are Most Likely to Make in Times of Economic Uncertainty. So, you know, there's some good bullet points in here, which we'll hit on and then kind of expand, you know, just to kind of touch on, you know, things that successful people are doing, you know, in times of uncertainty. You know, there's no standard answer, if you will. So I think we can kind of talk through a lot of, you know, the different issues that people are going through right now. So with that, you know, I will say, I actually taught, a little retirement class last night. So a lot of this stuff is fresh in my mind. But I think the first point the article made was what wealthy people are doing in times of uncertainty. Number one is planning for ups and downs. So I'll just kind of read this stat here and let you guys go. But I found this one particularly interesting. 84% of the wealthiest Americans said they have a long-term financial plan that accounts for economic ups and downs, according to Northwest Mutual. Only 52% of the general population said the same. So
84% of
the wealthiest Americans said they have a long-term financial plan that accounts for our ups and downs.
And those numbers sound really high to me. Like when mm-hmm. we talk to, you know, prospective clients, there it's very rare when someone walks in with a legit financial plan, cash flow based. So I'm surprised to hear the numbers are actually that high.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some of the more sophisticated investment or planning strategies I've seen from some like a do-it-yourself or things like that is a spreadsheet of a collection of the assets and how they go, maybe where they're at, how much is in there. Maybe they even did a budget, you know, that's probably the 10% of the population do budgets. But all those things I just mentioned are so important to get the inventory so we can start building a plan.
Absolutely. I think, you know, from my takeaway from this is, you know, people are afraid of the unknown, right? Literally mm-hmm. the definition of anxiety. So as you transition into retirement, people are wondering like, how is this going to work? How am I going to pay my bills in retirement, right? Mm-hmm. And with financial planning, along with pretty much everything else in life, the connection is like the more you're prepared for that event helps you remove that anxiety. So what are you doing to test how the future could play out so you have more confidence in how you personally will, you know, respond in different scenarios?
Well, I mean, the one thing that I see – And Derek, you know, like we do the educational classes and stuff. And I always say that when somebody walks in, there's three things in retirement. There are goals, strategies, and tools. And a financial tool would be like their investments, 401ks, mutual funds, ETFs, stocks, you know, NVIDIA stock, whatever that is. That's a tool. But what's the strategy? What's the allocation? Why are we saving for all this stuff to eventually retire? Am I retired? Why is it there? And a lot of people worry about their tools and they say they might be planning for, you know, the number one planning for the ups and downs, you know, having a plan is part of the thing that brings everything together. Because when I start seeing tools, I start thinking emotional investing. I start thinking behavioral finance errors. People tend to make the wrong moves with their investments at the wrong time. Same thing with maybe even picking a retirement date. Hey, I'm retiring at 62. Why? I've had enough. I get that. Definitely a reason to retire. Is that the right time for you? You know, so could you retire yesterday? Do you need to wait 3 more years to make sure that you're still saving enough, you're getting maybe debt paid down before you enter retirement, whatever it might look like. So those are some of the things that come to my mind. You know, are they really planning for the ups and downs? And what are the ups and downs that they should be aware of or the blind spots?
Yeah, you know, I think planning for the ups and downs, it's that's why we have asset allocation, right? Because not all these asset classes are always going to go up. You know, in that class last night, I remember throwing up the returns of the S&P 500 between 2010 and 2020, pretty much the biggest, you know, boom we've ever seen. And it doesn't go straight up, right? There's lots of ups and downs in there.
Yeah. It's up 100%, but it's not a straight line. We
definitely
know that,
not
right?
A straight line and lots of anxiety in there. That's why, you know, you have to take kind of a long-term perspective when you're looking at your personal finances. And that's why the financial plan, which we'll talk about, is really that's really the step you take to prepare, right? The more prepared you are, you know, the better you'll perform. You know, like the Cleveland Browns, obviously not prepared ever in the last 25
don't,
years.
Don't get to my canceled section yet. Not yet.
Yep.
So on that note, when I hear ups and downs, the actual tests that we run through the plan, right, to simulate that uncertainty in the future, we're running bear market tests. Like, what happens if the market drops in the year that you retire, right? Sequence mm-hmm. of returns, a really tough situation to deal with. We're testing for increased volatility. So, you know, what if our portfolios don't get the historical rates of return some people assume that we're going to get forever and ever and ever? What happened to that?
I mean, because the bear market is a very aggressive test. Because I always kind of say it this way, is that the day you retire, all your assets go down 20%. And that's significant because you're done working. That means you're done earning. You're done saving. And now you're spending. And spending in a down market is typically what wrecks a retirement plan, investment portfolio, because we're locking in losses.
Yep.
So.
Absolutely. And then, you know, the other tests that we typically run are a long-term care scenario, right? So how does your financial plan respond to a health issue in the future?
Mm-hmm.
The longer we live, the more likely we're going to have that type of an event. And we want to know ahead of time, are there steps that need to be made to protect us from that situation? So those are some examples, I think, that we're running through the scenarios. And I know our clients have told us that simulating that and then seeing, how the plan responds and taking the actions necessary to protect themselves have helped them sleep better at night. And that's the end goal at the end of the day.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, I see Tony staring down number two, so let's dive into that one. So number two. You know, this is an article. We're not just tooting our own horn here. But number two, I think is important, working with an advisor. So, you know, inside of the article basically says 7 out of 10 wealthy Americans are working with an advisor. You know, lots of reasons to do that. All advisors are certainly not created equal. But what Tony mentioned already, I think, is probably one of the most important things about working with an advisor, is not being subject to kind of the behavioral finance errors, which is kind of emotional investing, right? Behavioral finance is kind of a fascinating subject. You know, we could talk about it for an hour, but basically, it's the idea is, you know, when people are, you know, the markets are going up, everyone's excited, you want to get in on that, you know, you're going to buy on the way up, right? And then on the opposite side, when the market's selling off, you know, everything's in red, things aren't looking so good emotionally, you know, we want to sell off at that point as well too. So basically not giving into those behavioral finance issues is one of the biggest parts of working with an advisor.
Right. The emotional investing part. So at one of our research firms had a running tally. They haven't done it in almost a year. I'm curious on what it looks like. But basically from 1995 through September of 2022, almost 30 years, between 25 and 30 years, the market average return is 7.8%. And that means you're fully invested every single day, good and bad, in the S&P 500. It's a good rate of return. But there's, in those 30 years, there's been, I think, three economic catastrophes or market catastrophes, right? The tech bubble, the Great Recession, and then
COVID,
yeah. So there's three 100-year floods in 30 years. That's, you know, pretty significant. So, but what I'm getting at, 7.8% in that 30 years, and you had to be there through the sleepless nights and, you know, the days that you can sleep 24 hours, right? And just lay in bed. If you missed five of the best days in that 30 years, your average return went from 7.8 to like 6%. It was almost 2% difference. That's 5 days.
In 27 years.
Yes.
Yep.
That is crazy.
And that doesn't, I mean, on the surface, that doesn't sound like terrible on the surface. But when you come, when that's an average annualized rate.
Average yeah. annualized
So when
return.
You look at that over the course of 25 years, and if you calculated the numbers, I would hazard that's a 30 to 40%
I've change. Done the math on that.
Okay.
It's nearly an 80 to 100%
wow.
change because we use that one slide. I drive that home. The mm-hmm. difference between, you know, 8 and 10% over 30 years is 100% more money. The 2% rate of the
yeah.
the difference between 2% over 30 years
compounded
is 100%
out.
Compounded out is 100% more money.
That's wild.
If my math is off, okay, call it 80. That's still a big difference.
You rest your case.
I rest my case. So, but those five best days of the market typically came within probably 5 to 7 business days of the worst day. And that's probably when the people pulled the trigger and got out of the market. So that is just another reason why working with an advisor, they're a sounding board. They're your retirement CFO is what I would call them. Somebody to help you walk through financial decisions that can be irreversible, life-changing. And it's not only on the investments. I can't emphasize that enough. When to retire, how much to spend, what, hey, if I spend $100,000 renovation on my house, how does that impact my financial plan for the next 20 years?
Yeah.
I'm talking anything that you can possibly think about spending your money, you know, pre or post retirement. How does it affect you long term? That is what an advisor should do if they are building a good comprehensive financial plan.
And Tony, you know, I'll pile on with this behavioral coaching stuff. It's, you know, it comes down to the fact that your advisor has a slightly detached separation from your money. So we're able to provide a more sober and clear thinking thought pattern
yep.
based on logic and, you know, historical records of why you maybe don't want to take the move that your emotions are screaming that you want to.
Yep. Because when in there's emotional decisions all over the place. And that's why having what I refer to as a coordinated plan that takes in the account investments, taxes, estate planning, and building that financial plan to make sure all three of those other things are coordinated. Just getting everything in there so we can lay it all out and see what's going on.
I think the other add-on that people don't really think about is in our seat, we've seen a lot, right? We've seen a lot of different family situations, a lot of different scenarios, and maybe you're not thinking about one of the pitfalls that are up ahead, but we can leverage our experience and our knowledge to help you maybe test for a scenario you haven't even been thinking about, whether it's runaway inflation or, you know, that long-term care event. But there are a lot of common pitfalls that may be a blind spot for you personally.
Yep.
For sure.
And then what's the third thing, Derek?
Staying committed to a financial plan.
All right, so first you have to have the plan, and then you got to run the playbook.
So yeah, I think that's the first thing I'll mention here real quick. I don't know the exact numbers anymore, but it's pretty much 8 out of 10 financial advisory firms really aren't putting any effort or little effort into the financial planning process. They're kind of, you know, hyper-focused on investments only. So that, obviously, since we've been talking about it the whole time, about financial planning, is very important to have. You know, all these things that we're talking about are making impacts on people's bottom lines, you know, before we even talk about the investments. And then second thing real quick, and I'll let you guys go, income planning. If you're pulling money out of your account to pay for your retirement lifestyle from, you know, like equity stocks, you know, on the way down, you know, you're definitely doing it wrong. We want to make sure we have a coordinated income plan so we know where that income is coming from. You know, for example, you know, we usually have around like 3 years or so worth of you know, bonds, cash equivalents, things like that. If we're pulling money out of, you know, the investment accounts, it has a specific, you know, bucket where the money's going to come out of first.
Right.
So it, even if there are tough times, you know, it doesn't impact your situation as much.
Yeah. You know, I would say like the active management side of things, mm-hmm. you know, and making sure it's a coordinated plan again. You know, I think it's one thing to have a financial plan, but some advisors might just have planning software and say, hey, I built you a financial plan. But I mean, so does Fidelity's retirement calculator that you can do in 3 minutes.
Right.
Yes.
Our plans take 6 to 8 hours. do you, by just knowing the time input into those two softwares, which one would you rather have? What you think is more accurate, right? It's the one that's spending somebody who happens to be like a CFP, like our planners, right? They're spending 6 to 8 hours. They know a lot of, they know exactly what's going on, and they're entering little fine details on everything that's going on and what your goals are in your retirement plan.
So when we toss the word financial plan around, there's a lot of different versions of that, right? In our world, it's a cash flow based financial plan. That literally means like the software is modeling on a year by year basis the ins and outs of your financial life and seeing how it responds during different economic conditions and different rates of return. The other unfortunately common method of planning is just to crunch the numbers and use a straight line rate of return. So maybe, you know, they even use a historical average number, say somewhere around 8%. But the problem is they're using a straight line constant number. And anyone who's invested for longer than 6 months knows that's not how the stock market works or the markets work. There are going to be periods of up and down. Tony, you hit on it earlier with the volatility and that, you know, 25-year period where you got a nice average annual return. But there were certainly peaks and valleys throughout that process.
Yeah. And Derek, you mentioned like income planning. Like that's a big deal because not only do you have to generate the income in retirement, you know, whether that's $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 a month to live your lifestyle. Okay. Maybe you have half of your money in a non-qualified brokerage account. Maybe you have half the other half in an IRA. Maybe you have a Roth IRA. What is the coordinated effort to take the money out tax efficiently? So I've always noticed that the planning software tends to spend your money tax efficiently because they're not a human being doing the tax return and figuring out the lowest rate of returns. They might just get rid of your least tax efficient account first. So they'll spend your cash and then your traditional IRA and leave your Roth for the end. And you know, that if you can dip from each one of those buckets through retirement, now we're talking about tax efficiency and depleting each asset in a coordinated basis to keep your taxes low every single year. Because if you spend all your cash and then you hit the traditional IRA, your taxes go up immensely when you're out of the cash. But you can have a coordinated effort to dip from all of these different buckets and keep your effective tax down.
Yeah, makes sense. And going back to that point of just like staying committed to the plan, what my takeaway from that is what we've seen in our offices, the clients who understand the why it is their situation is set up the way that it is are more likely to stick with the plan because they see and they have the confidence that the results actually work. When it's more of a black box and you just give guidance on, hey, finger up in the air, hey, this should work. Like there's less, I think, commitment to the concepts behind the plan of what's driving the results.
Yep. Another thing that, we'll do to stay committed to the financial plan is that we know things change and maybe they change weekly, monthly, annually, every decade. We like to refresh our clients' plans every year.
Every month. Better hire some more planners.
Right. Every year so that we can just reevaluate all the recommendations that were recommended the year before because things change. It could be inflation, taxes, health,
moving.
I'm buying a second house. Yes. I'm upgrading. I'm downgrading. I want to go on more vacations, mm-hmm. whatever that might look or sound like.
I plan on taking the money from my IRA account. If anyone wants a good laugh, go to YouTube and look up Day in the Life of a Financial Advisor.
How much do you and your husband make?
Why do you want to know?
So I can tell you whether or not you will get financial aid.
We make $100,000.
You will not get any financial aid.
I will ask my accountant about that.
Your accountant cannot get you financial aid. We should be realistic and look at other options.
I don't want an annuity. I hate annuities.
An annuity has nothing to do with education. And why do you hate annuities?
Because Susie Orman says they are evil. She said you would try to sell me an annuity. I hate annuities. Susie Orman, Susie Orman, Susie Orman. I don't like to pay fees.
Yeah, I think last thing I'll say, being committed to the plan, I think that's going through this process, getting a plan done, having a good asset allocation, getting education and understanding why, everything is where it is, that really helps with the peace of mind. That's why, I don't want to say like I don't get any phone calls, when markets are turbulent, because I do, but certainly not, all of my clients calling in all at once in a panic. I get basically no panic phone calls because we've gone through this process and they're confident in the plan and in the process.
That's a great point, Derek. And it brings me to my, key takeaway that the best time to go through this exercise is when the waters are calm. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be crisis planning as the bullets are flying. You want to have a well mapped out plan in advance because, like Derek said, they're not calling because we've already simulated that. Mm-hmm. They know how things are going to respond and they have confidence in the success of their plan.
Yep. And then we build a lot of conservatism into the plan. We're not using historical rates of return. We're using what our CFAs feel would be future projected rates of return. So they're a lot lower. And obviously, we want to overshoot, but if they don't and they come in lower than they have been over the last decade, that's part of the conservatism we build into the financial plans because we're listening to our investment team and the planning team is a coordinated effort with, the investment team and the planning team are all on the same page.
Absolutely.
All right. So as we wrap this up, who doesn't like a... we got to keep the tradition going. Canceled.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Brown season is canceled. unfortunately, obviously everyone understands that Nick Chubb, tore up his knee, the same knee he did in college. Some would speculate that could be career ending for him to come back from something like that. And unfortunate because he was, I believe it, America's running back.
Mm-hmm.
Good work ethic. Kept his head down. Didn't make a scene, wasn't showboating, score his touchdown, spike the ball and get back to the sideline to keep the team, get the next team on the field, right? The next kicking team and special teams and all that, class act at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But man, Deshaun Watson, good God, man, is
canceled the forward pass.
He's in. He can't throw the ball. How many times did he throw it out of bounds by 20 yards when he needed to, when we needed a completion and he wasn't under pressure? Mm-hmm. Like, holy cow. And so he's not accurate. He's obviously not very smart, because how many personal fouls and turnovers did
he? Two face masks by a quarterback.
Right. That's impressive.
Impressive.
Impressive. Shoved the ref. He could be suspended, they say. So we'll find out on that. But at the end of the day, can we say that, hey, he got paid and good for him? Isn't it our owner that wrecked this? Like, that's just on him. He guaranteed and paid that guy. Like, Baker Mayfield has better stats than really Watson does right now down in Tampa. Like, I don't know.
This is how we do things.
Well, you're only locked into him for 4 more years.
Oh, is that it? Okay. All right. And then how many years of first-round draft picks? 2 more years? 3 more years?
I think this is the last year without a first-rounder.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was way more than
you're
that.
You're only allowed to trade so many first-round picks.
I think that's the NBA.
Yeah.
And that's because of the Cavs, actually. All right. Well, good show this week. I always like bringing it back to the planning and kind of what, you know, people are doing. So I really enjoyed this one. If you have any questions, comments, concerns out there, hit us up at info@swpconnect.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
The opinions expressed in the podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any investment, legal, financial, or tax strategy. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. Please consult a qualified professional about your individual needs.